Welcome to the AHDB podcast. I'm Jane Craigie, and today we are talking to three monitor farmers, Richard Orr, Roger Wilson, and Colin Chappell. I hope you enjoy it. First up, we speak to Richard Orr in Northern Ireland.
Good morning, Richard. Lovely to see you.
Good morning, Jane. How are you?
Good. Shame this isn't over a cup of tea, but next time maybe.
Yes.
Richard, I was going to ask you first to tell me a little bit about where you farm and also what you farm.
Yeah, so we're in Northern Ireland. We're based in County Down, so we're on the southeast coast, about an hour below Belfast, our main city. And we farm mainly arable and potatoes, but we're running about 450 acres between arable potatoes. We grow some silage for a local digester, and then we have our farm shop and tea room as well, which really, I suppose now, is the core workings of the business. We grow our potatoes and vegetables to go through that direct to the customer.
And Richard, why did you decide to get involved with the Monitor Farm Programme?
Yeah, I wanted to get involved with the Monitor Farm really to, you know, I'm a young farmer, I need to learn. I don't know everything. And there's a lot of farmers and a lot of experts and AHDB members that have a lot of information out there to pass on. But I think that's where the Monitor Farm program is excellent. There's a lot of information there that doesn't get passed on very handy. COVID has been something that has very much highlighted the issues when farmers can't interact with farmers. Just as you said at the start, over a cup of tea, if I as a monitor farmer have a meeting and I'm not sure of the answer, or the participant's not sure of the answer, we can have a wee chat afterwards. We discuss it. We all learn something. And the day you don't learn something someday, because we're learning all the way through our life, and it's important to keep learning and keep growing and learn from your peers and learn from people around you. And the AHDB has an absolute wealth of knowledge. If they don't have it, they know who has it. So it's a great way of passing that information on.
And Richard, what challenges were you hoping to address or to change in the business or on the farm or both?
I suppose things I was looking to improve on or maybe change slightly was, I'd been kind of dealing with the arable and the potatoes and growing the crops and working with the soil for the last 10 or 12 years from I come home from school and sort of took that end over. And it is the buzzword at the minute, but I need to know more about the soil and the workings of the soil and how I could use our most important asset on the farm as much as possible without debilitating it or destroying it, and the best way forward. And because I was only starting that journey, there was a lot of other people further down the line, and I wanted to see what I could learn and pick up from them so that I wasn't starting from scratch, and hopefully skip out a few points that people say do work, don't work, and hit the ground running and see if we could improve that. And with that, that would probably change my rotation slightly. We had quite a vast rotation, trying to be variable and trying to put a bit of a mix in the rotation, because we're at the point where you can have too much and too many things going on. And sometimes simpler is better, as long as you're not affecting your overall rotation on your soil. So focusing on soil and rotation to get the best balance for me and the soil.
And you've got a busy business with everything that you've got on, dealing with end consumers as well. Has the Monitor Farm program helped you with that side of your business? And also, I suppose, prioritizing time and resource between the different enterprises that you have on the farm?
Yes, and currently that is still one of the biggest issues, is prioritising time, because industry-wide, worldwide, staffing and shortages, COVID, balance and everything, it's become a tricky situation. And I say to some of the guys in the farm shop and tea room, getting an afternoon on a tractor is stress relief now, because that's easy. I know what I'm doing, I can control that. But when you're trying to deal with public and staff and everything else that goes around that, it can get very complicated, and it's nearly a full-time job just managing that. But at the same time, we then have an outlet direct to the end consumer who we can hopefully educate. We can sell them the produce at hopefully a better balanced price. And at the moment, it's very difficult in a market if you're relying on a supermarket or a wholesaler to prop up your business. And that's not really the way I want to go forward.
And what have you most valued about being a monitor farm?
I think this last year as well has kind of highlighted that the farmer-to-farmer learning and that interaction over the cup of tea or a wee chat before or after the meeting is as vitally important as the actual crux of the meeting. You can get the points out there, or your expert speaker can provide some of the information. It's the wee bit at the end where you dissect that and you debate it and you argue it, and everybody works together and says, this works, this doesn't work. And hopefully you come to some sort of consensus that might work for me. And to me, that's the biggest bit. It's sharing information with people who are willing to share information. Previous schemes and ideas, you could have people standing at the very back of the room, kicking tires. They listen, but they don't tell. And the only way it works is when it's a two-way street and everybody is open and shares their knowledge and information for the betterment of both parties or all parties. And that's the key thing I've taken from it. If you can work with a good group of people who are willing to share and learn, it's been an excellent program. I'll be sorry when it's over.
That's good to hear. And that's a recurring theme. I've been speaking to Colin Chappell and also Roger Wilson about their experiences as a monitor farm, and they said it's that openness, it's the bearing all, and you know, when you're going into this, that's what you need to do to get the most out of it.
Yeah, and that's one thing I found when I stand up at the start of a meeting. If I'm asked a question and I can't answer it, well then why can't I answer it, and what do I need to do to be able to answer it? And it's not a problem that I can't answer it, but it gives me a point to go and learn. Well, why couldn't I answer it? Or you want to be asked the awkward question so that you can go away and learn yourself and gain from that. So there's a few good guys in our group who like to ask questions, and I encourage that. I want open debate. I don't want people to sit there quietly and listen. So yeah, I can learn as much from them as they can from me.
What changes have you made to your business and also personally, and how do you feel about those changes?
Well, definitely our focus has changed on how we manage the soil, and everything is about looking after it, and you don't do something when you shouldn't, and you don't let somebody in when they shouldn't be. In many ways, I said, now that we've gone to reduced cultivation and better soil management, it's actually more difficult. Some people say, yes, it's less workload and it's easier. But you have to pick and choose and be very precise how you do it to get the best out of it. But the rewards are there. So we've simplified our rotation. We've been able to increase then our first wheats even by doing that. We're looking after our soil. We're able then to reduce our input slightly and manage the whole thing that I feel after 4 years nearly now, because I got an extended term, our soil, our land, our business is more forgiving. We can take the ebbs and flows of weather, etc., easier, and it just gives us a wee buffer zone there that we're not as open to the major issues. And I suppose personally myself, from I started in the first monitor farm meeting, standing up terrified that I was going to talk to a group of farmers and I was going to get all these questions asked, as to now you turn up in the morning waiting and looking forward to the debate and who's going to ask you what, and can you answer it, and can you have a friendly debate, and thoroughly enjoyable, and we're learning all the time.
Yeah, I think that was very telling when you said you'll be sad when it ends. That says a lot. And what have been your three highlights, would you say, Richard?
The highlights really, and it maybe becomes more of a highlight because we haven't been fit to do it as much, is the summer farm meeting where the farmers get together around the whole farm. It's a friendly atmosphere, a bit of a sort of festival feel that everybody's out for a day's enjoyment, but we're still learning, we're interacting, we're having a bit of fun, a bit of crack. And that is we're sadly missing at the moment, especially in farming, because we are an isolated job. You know, you can sit in the tractor 7 days a week working away and see nobody, and that sort of interaction, that the meetings, the events, the shows, they're not there, and that bit of interaction with your local farmers and a catch up is a highlight of the year at the moment, really.
And what advice would you give to other farmers considering becoming a monitor farm?
Oh, well, if you've never been to a monitor farm meeting, or you want to be a monitor farmer, absolutely go along to your nearest meeting, get stuck in, see what it's like. There's no harm in going along. You'll always learn something. You'll meet somebody new. You might see some of your neighbours and friends and you get a chat. It's a great way of learning with interaction, and you don't really feel that you're learning. I think the HDB have got it really right here that farmers don't like to go and listen to an expert all the time because they feel the expert's trying to sell them something or tell them something that suits their agenda. Whereas if it's coming from the farmer, or it's there in person that they can go and kick a bit of soil or look at a crop and see it happening, it works far better. And I think that's a vital part of the HDB going forward, that their monitor farms and strategic farms continue to flourish.
That takes me neatly on to, what do you most value about AHDB and its work?
I always would have referred to the HDB and their website or their publications or recommended lists over the years, and found a lot of them information invaluable. Being a monitor farmer and being involved more with the HDB, the knowledge that is there is absolutely vast. I think farmers, and even people that maybe come to the monitor farm meetings, don't realise that if they just lift the phone and ring their local knowledge exchange manager, the answer's there, or if it's not, they'll find out for you. And it's that willingness to share the information and help you out that really needs to be pushed forward, because that's our way forward. You know, getting the information across to the farmer and working together. A lot of the time the farmer's afraid to go and ask for information. Just pick up the phone, give them a call, go to the meeting, say, I would like to learn off this, even at our monitor farm meetings, or next autumn we're going to have meetings. What would you like to hear? We're asking them what they want. So it's farmer-led, farmer-driven, as they say. So if the farmer wants to know something, ask the question and the answer will be there.
And AHDB has opened up its Shape the Future process. What are your views of AHDB and its role in the industry?
I think the AHDB role in the industry is vital. Like any industry, there's always room for improvement and more things can be done. But I think over the last number of years, their monitor farm, strategic farm approach to me is the way to focus it going forward and maintain that farmer interaction. It's okay just to publish a publication with all the information, but that doesn't necessarily get it to people on the ground. And that direct sharing of information, having local events, is to me is the way forward. And I would like to see that continue.
And any advice to AHDB about priorities going forward?
I suppose in many ways that you got to go with the trends and the things that's popular. And we know going forward that the environment and carbon is going to be popular, whether correct or incorrect. But the farmers need that guidance and that information on how they manage their future based on that, because regulation will probably say so. So I think it's important that the AHDB is following what is in guidance or what is in regulation or what is important, or being one step ahead of what is coming so that the farmer can be prepared. A good example is we've done our carbon audits through the Monitor Farm programme to give me an insight as to where I am and where I'm starting from, so that then we can make decisions going forward. So that information that can help the farmer down the line and being that wee bit ahead of the game is vitally important, and that goes on trend, I suppose.
Yeah, that's really, really sound words. And Richard, if we're over in your direction, what's the name of your farm shop and your tea room so we can come in and say hello?
Yeah, well, we're a Meadow Farm Shop and Tea Room, and we're based just between Crossgar and Downpatrick there. So, and unfortunately, you probably don't get it, but we're on the local Rare Breeds TV programme this season as well, a few times. So I'm trying to hopefully educate the public and provide a wee bit of information about what we do and why we do it. But yes, we're open, ready for the customers.
Well, good on you for all that you do. And thank you so much for your time, Richard.
Oh, not a bother. Thank you very much. Oh, it's a pleasure.
Next is Roger Wilson in Wiltshire.
Good morning, Roger. Lovely to see you.
Morning, Jane, and yourself.
Well, I'm really interested in finding out more about your monitor farm experience. So I thought I'd just start by asking you a little bit about your farm, where it is, what your enterprises are.
Yeah, we farm in North Wiltshire on the edge of the Cotswolds. We farm around about 650 acres at the moment, mostly owned. We rent a little bit and we actually have a share farm agreement with a near neighbour. Enterprise-wise, arable, as you appreciate. And also we have a small beef finishing unit. So our farming is a 365 days of the year operation.
And why did you decide to get involved with the Monitor Farm programme?
Well, it's really bizarre because I knew nothing about it at all. And there was a little thing on an NFU email and I thought, oh, I don't know what that is. So I read into it, submitted an application form, went through two interviews, which was actually quite scary. It wasn't really. And as I say, the rest is history, you know. Here I am now, an ex-monitor farmer.
Yeah, you're just at the end of it, aren't you? And what challenges were you hoping to address or to change in the business or on your farm?
Well, being a family farm, obviously succession is quite high on my priority. And also, like many, many farmers, you know, we do have a grass weed issue. So that was our two main priorities, really.
So by grass weeds, you mean black grass in your arable rotation?
Black grass and to a lesser extent, rye grass.
Okay, so a real pernicious problem on the farm.
Indeed, yes. Mm-hmm.
And what have you most valued about being a monitor farmer?
Well, actually meeting other farmers, it can be a very lonely existence. I mean, fortunately, because we keep livestock, you know, I do go to market, so I see a few people there. But if one wanted to, you could really go all year without seeing anybody. And I think there's a contact with other farmers, you know, I really value that. I sort of, you know, like many people, went through Young Farmers, so I've always been used to sort of meeting people and chatting to people. And it's really almost like an extension of that. A friend's daughter described us as old farmers, which is probably quite true. I just think, you know, it's good to talk, and you know, nobody has all the answers, but I think together, you know, we can sort of come up with a few solutions to problems.
And Roger, what changes? You mentioned succession and you mentioned grass weeds in your arable rotation. What changes have you made to your business and also personally? And how do you feel about these changes?
The biggest change to our business, after always using a contractor for combining, we actually bought our own combine harvester. This was really, we took a little more ground on, and I posed a question at one of our monitor farm meetings, mobile dryer or combine harvester. And only one person came up to me afterwards and said, buy a combine. I thought that was a little bit drastic, but he gave his reasons why. And at the time, though, my son was still at university, but it was bought on the conditions that he would drive it and look after it. So from that point of view, it gave us two answers. A, it's helped us control our grass weed situation. You know, my son William, he's very, very methodical with hygiene between fields and farms. And also it sort of gave him a particular role within our business. He finished, because when we first started, he was in his second year at university, which at the time I thought perhaps it was not quite the right time for me to be doing this, but as it turned out, it really was. That one decision really changed the way we farm. It's given us more control over our business, but it also has given my son a specific role within the farm.
And help to tackle the weed
Absolutely,
issue.
And it has made a difference, no doubt about it. And so, we have killed two birds with one stone, as they say.
And presumably, Roger, by more control, you mean, being able to combine when the timing is right, the weather's right, and then also the follow-up. So your cultivations and then your drilling is all within your control.
Absolutely. Timing is everything within farming. Our weather pattern or climate, it has changed, certainly in my lifetime. And it's quite a nice situation where invariably, we look back through, I monitor the rainfall, and our August seemed to be traditionally a messy month. But at least now, if we suddenly think late afternoon, we can go and do a bit of harvesting, we can do so. We don't have to ring up somebody else and say we want to go in an hour's time. We can go in 5 minutes' time. So it certainly has given us a bit of, I wouldn't say it's any cheaper to run your own combine, but certainly from a peace of mind it is.
And Roger, what combine did you buy and how did you buy it?
With John Deere mainly. And when we bought it, it was 6 years old. It had done very little work. And obviously it had to be financed because we didn't have obviously anything to part exchange. But we were quite fortunate. We have a near neighbour. I knocked on his door one Sunday morning and said, we're going to buy a combine. He just said, go ahead and buy it. So we spread the harvesting there over about 750 acres. So that almost just about made it affordable, really. It's what price do you put on convenience? It's very difficult, especially when you get catchy harvest. It means that we are, I wouldn't say ahead of the game, but at least we're not left behind.
And Roger, you mentioned at the beginning that you collaborate with other farmers. How do you collaborate? And has the combine been a part of that?
Yeah, we share a farm with a neighbour. It's not a vast acreage, it's about 130 acres. Previous share farmer, they gave up farming. So we were in a situation where we could, and at least having our own equipment, gave me more confidence to go and ask somebody, would you like us to do your work? Without having to rely on, a contractor for any part of that operation. And it gives, hopefully, it's given our share farming partner the confidence to trust us to do his work.
And just leading on to that, Roger, I'm really interested in finding out what your soil type is and what cultivation system you use and also drill.
Our soil type varies from a typical Cotswold brash, although we don't have the big stones that a lot of people do. We've got quite a lot of very, very kind, easy working soils, but we also have quite a large area of quite nasty clay. So we run all sorts of cultivation methods and drilling methods. We have min-tilled since the mid-1990s. We still have a plough, and very, very recently, we actually have acquired a Claydon direct drill. So for next harvest, we'll have all three types of establishment methods have been used. Direct drilling is new to us, something we wanted to go down, and the opportunity arose to actually bought a second-hand one at auction, which, certainly the crops at the moment, but I think, our crops, like everybody else's this time, look pretty good actually. So it's early days yet, but certainly I think it's the right way to go.
And did the Monitor Farm meetings and the advice that you got and the discussion that you had with farmers, did that help in that decision about how you cultivate and drill?
I don't, it's interesting to see how other people do things, and I think most people do min-till nowadays. It's just a matter of how you do that. Partway through our term, we changed to a one-pass cultivation system rather than three passes before drilling. So that cut a cost a little bit. But obviously, going down the direct drill route, it slashed our costs considerably.
Oh, it's really good to hear. And back to, you know, why and what you got out of being a monitor farmer, what have been your three highlights of being involved?
Well, we had some really, really great meetings. I think our best attended was when we had the discussion on carbon. Becky Wilson came and spoke to us. That was our best attended meeting. So many questions unanswered. I was quite pleased that obviously prior to that meeting, I did my carbon audit. We actually came out quite well. And obviously, if we didn't use any nitrogen fertilizer, we came out even better. that was our best attended meeting. And quite early in the program, Philip Wright came to talk to us about soils. And I think with that, though, what made the day for us all, it was a nice day and we were able to go out in the field and dig holes. As I say, a picture's worth a thousand words. Explained to everybody, including myself, you know, what he was looking for. And the bonus for me was that that particular field, our soils were actually quite good. So that was a bit of a stroke of luck. And I guess our most controversial meeting, only attended by 12 members or farmers, was actually on succession with Heather Wildman. It was only people sort of like us, family farms with succession issues or what have you. And that was quite interesting. I think some people came away feeling a little bit shocked by what we discussed, but it's one of these things, nobody likes to talk about it, but I think it's good to talk. You know, we haven't really made too many changes in our future plans on the back of that, but at least it's good to have started the process.
And personally, Roger, what do you feel you've got out of it as an individual?
I think I have gained a little bit more knowledge and what have you. You know, I wouldn't say what we do is perfect, but at least it's quite reassuring that what we do and how we do is replicated by an awful lot of farmers. So I think either that we're all right or we're all wrong.
Yeah, that's such a good point. And what advice would you give other farmers who are maybe considering becoming a monitor farm?
Go for it. I think you've got to be prepared to reveal all, as I say, warts and all, because, you know, we had a couple of duff harvests during my time. Early on in the program, you know, we had some pretty dirty fields with black grass. So at least people could see the progress that we had made in our farming. So hopefully from start to finish, you know, we could see a change in our crops, but ultimately, you know, we can't control the weather. And I think that really has the biggest effect on all of us, you know, irrespective of what we might do. If the weather's not favourable, then nothing really works.
No, that's so true. And Roger, AHDB has opened its Shape the Future process. What are your views of AHDB and its role in the industry?
It's a lot of controversy about AHDB. It strikes me that there's a minority of farmers out there who would like to see it abolished. I think they have to remember that it is farmer financed. You know, it is truly independent. And I think what else will they get for their money? I think I worked at it one time. The average farmer would pay about £365 a year. I think this year we'll pay ourselves about £800. But what can I buy for £800 that will give me the information that we get from AHDB? Nothing that I'm aware of. I think, you know, if it wasn't there, where would we go for independent advice? There's lots of advice out there funded by people who have a vested interest, but, you know, AHDB are truly independent. So hopefully that will encourage people to vote for it to stay in where it is. Okay, I'm not saying it doesn't have to change, but I think fundamentally to make drastic changes, I think would be rather wrong.
And what do you most value about AHDB and its work?
That's an advantage to a lot of other farmers having been involved, because really until we became a monitor farm for cereals and oil seeds, I guess it was the cattle side that I'd use more from AHDB. And I think, you know, when you get involved, you really begin to understand what they do. Ironically, this year, it's only January, but I've been to two. I still go to monitor farm meetings. And last night, I listened to the webinar. So there are lots of things out there. The problem is people don't make the effort to see what's actually available. And, you know, they've got a website. Most people have a computer nowadays. There's so much information available. It's just sifting through what's relevant for your business.
And what work and activities do you think AHDB should prioritise for the future and why?
Well, I think the first thing, which is very difficult, is they need to find out who their levy payers are. The unfortunate thing is that the levy is collected through a third party, like grain merchants, abattoirs and what have you. So AHDB do not really know who is paying a levy. Now, somehow that needs to be overcome. And that way, everybody who is contributing is able to reap the rewards from that. And I think that that's, that to my mind should be a priority. Get a list of who's paying, get them involved, and I think that will hopefully allay some people's concerns.
Yeah, and in terms of the focus on their work, their R&D work and the information that they provide you as farmers, where should they prioritise?
I do think marketing plays an important part. Again, you know, we're all contributing, whether you're milking cows, growing horse your rate, selling pigs, whatever, you know, we all contribute to it. And I think marketing is fundamental. At the moment, there's quite a keen interest in safely produced British food. And I think, you know, perhaps they should capitalise on that. You know, at the end of the day, okay, they haven't got an endless budget. But I think, you know, if it's used wisely to promote British food, British produce, that's got to be the way ahead.
Very, very wise words. And I'm sure that AHGB is going to be all ears in listening to what you as a farmer has to say. And I can't thank you enough, Roger, for sharing your thoughts and also your Monitor Farm experience. So thank you very much.
A pleasure. Thank you.
And finally, we head to Colin Chapel in Lincolnshire.
Colin, you've been a Monitor Farmer for a number of years.
Well, one more than I was supposed to be due to COVID.
Yes, so COVID has affected so much, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about your farm.
Okay, well, we are a traditional for the area, mixed bit of livestock, quite a lot of arable in the Ancombe Valley. So we look after 645 hectares, of which approximately 40 of those are grassland, permanent pasture, and always has been. We are very low-lying, so we are at sea level, and we are controlled by the River Ancombe, which unfortunately has a gate at the end of it that allows water onto the River Humber, which most of the time just works naturally with the tides, but some of the time has to be overridden and man takes control of it. And when man takes control of water, we are always in trouble. So we have this historic problem with flooding down here. We don't often suffer droughts, but we do suffer from waterlogging. I'm a fourth generation farmer, but third generation at this site.
And what inspired you to become a Monitor Farmer? And how did you first hear about the opportunity?
So Harry Henderson was near Alford. He was at a place called Aby. I'd signed up to go. It always clashed with something else. The autumn schedule is getting quite full nowadays and meetings just come thick and fast. So I always knew it was there. I'd never actually taken part in one. I was on the list to go, and they started searching for a new one. And they had fairly narrow parameters of where they wanted to go because they liked to set them up in new areas each time. They had narrow parameters. They actually approached a friend of mine at the one end of the A15. He suggested my name as a potential candidate because he was a bit too diverse. He had dairy herd, he had lots of cropping, and he suggested me. So Harry came to see me. We struck up quite a good conversation, and before I knew it, I was the big Monitor Farmer.
And what have you most enjoyed about the experience?
Talking to other farmers. We always seem to like a busman's holiday. We all like to go have a look around somebody else's farm. If you can't physically do that, you can talk about it. You can talk about these farmers. You get them together and all they end up talking, they gravitate towards farming. That's what they talk about. So I really enjoyed the knowledge exchange. And going forward, when we lose subsidies, when we lose BPS, we're going to need that support. We're going to need the support of each other. And farmers historically are not very good at working together, but they are very good at talking to each other. So it's a talking to other people. But the irony is that's also the bit I found most difficult. Talking and asking people for help and asking people for information. We are so insular in where we are. Every single farmer is. We look after our own patch. We worry about our own little patch. We don't tend to think about everything else. It's sort of London's a light year away from where we are. Scotland's the other end of it. But you get to talk to these people from Shetlands to London to, you know, and you work out we're not actually that different at the end of the day. But we all have individual problems. And by talking to people, you can maybe find a way to find the solution to that problem.
And how has your farm changed since becoming a Monitor Farmer?
If there was a template to create resilience on a farm, I've just done it in the last 4 years. And I called it a journey. When they started, I called it a journey. And I have been on a journey. It has transformed the way I farm, the way I think, the way I look at things. And that has only come about by being a Monitor Farmer, but also by talking to my fellow farmers, trying to understand their problems and trying to bring people, speakers, to talk to them about what their issues are, but also that thing about we are all the same. We are not that different and we all have similar problems. So if we just talk, and as a male, one of the most powerful ones was as a male, to stand up towards the end of my meeting and talk openly about some issues I'd had with the RPA and mapping issues and pensions regulator, the weight of bureaucracy on our shoulders. And what that did was allow another of my very now close friends to stand up and give us his story. And I don't have a problem compared to him. But that was very emotional. I still well up thinking about it now. Because I'd stood up and said my story, he stood up and told us his. And that was just unbelievably powerful. Unbelievably powerful. And to be part of that is just something special, I think.
I can see it's really had a positive personal impact on you. And
that one in particular, yes. And the other one that was particularly special was an organic farmer. We'd actually asked a guy called John Pawsey. You probably met John. But unfortunately, autumn schedules, clash of meetings, etc. So a guy called Richard, I believe it's Tomlinson, but I might have got his surname wrong, from the Organic Farmers and Growers, came to talk to us. And it was like that, right, okay, here we go, farmers bashing each other. You know, you're wrong, I'm wrong, you know. But in the end, when he finished his meeting, we all got together and we all spoke to him and we said, your problems are just the same as ours. It's just you haven't got the chemistry to deal with it. And maybe that's how we should be dealing with these things. If you didn't have the plough, if you didn't have the chemical can, if you didn't have the fertilizer, how would you address some of the problems you've got at the moment? And in actual fact, that's when the light bulb started going on in here of, okay, we need to move away from the plough. We need to move away from the chemistry. We need to move away from the fertilizer. We can't ignore it. We've been on it for such a long time. If you address those sort of issues and look at your soil health first, then all the rest falls into place and becomes a natural environment.
And you started to touch on the changes that you've made on the farm, Colin. So what changes have you made as a result of the meetings that you've had and also the engagement that you've had with AHDB on your farm? And how do you feel about those changes?
How do I feel about changes? I'm much more positive. I'm a much more positive character. The confidence, and unfortunately, confidence can sometimes come across as arrogance. So you have to be careful that you are not blowing your own trumpet because you're trying to take a group with you on the same journey that you've been on. The confidence in what I'm doing and why I'm doing it has grown. I was a little bit scattergun approach to everything, buying machinery, to cultivating my land, to getting on the treadmill, as I call it, of the T-noughts, the T-1s, the T-2s, the T-3 fungicides. To start with, we benchmarked our figures against other people, which I think is vitally important because you want to know, one year you can be at the top and one year you can be at the bottom. And what you need to know is, how do you get to mortar there at the top? And how can you avoid being at the bottom? And each year is slightly different, and therefore it's a continual process over a number of years. Inadvertently, we hired a combine. We had a certain brand of combine that was fine for the first 4 years, but the next 5 years cost us a small fortune, and then meant we couldn't afford to buy a combine. So we ended up hiring a combine. Inadvertently, the facts and figures that came out of that through the benchmarking and the monitoring process was the fact that I've got no depreciation on a huge, great machine that only works 6 weeks of the year. 6 weeks out of 52 weeks, we use a combine. Why do we own that? Why do we need to own that? Why do we feel that as farmers, we need to spend all our hard-earned profit in stopping the government getting their hands on it in tax? So inadvertently, we'd actually come across that thing that nobody ever looks at until they get to the financial end of the year is the depreciation. And inadvertently, my depreciation was really quite low. But one of the years, the second year we went into it, I bought a new tractor and a sprayer. So I had high costs and high depreciation, and I was still running high fixed costs as well. So it was a case of benchmarking and finding out where to be. So we've now hired the combine. We've stopped buying machinery full stop because we have quite a nice new fleet and with money going forward. My approach to the soils has completely changed from, well, the only way I can describe it is Philip Wright came, the very first meeting we had. And Philip Wright, we were discussing ploughs and plough skimmers and shares and how to plough properly on heavy clay soils. And the last meeting was all about the fact that I am now in my fourth year of direct drilling. The fact you need to be pragmatic about it. You can't just go from a plough to a direct drill. There's a stage manage approach, and that only comes from talking to people. You're encouraged to go to the direct drilling route. You're encouraged to ditch the plough, but the whole process on my soils, which are getting on for 62% clay content, they are very heavy soils. How do you treat them with kid gloves? And the less you do to the soil, actually, the more open they are. So soil health, cultivation, benchmarking are just several of the key points that I've learned from the whole process.
And are you seeing benefits already to your bottom line and to your soil health?
Soil health, absolutely, definitely. The one I would like to see is my fuel costs. My fuel costs are still, fuel is, you know, probably filled up your car recently. They are ridiculously high. We need to get a grip of those. So my fuel costs haven't come down the way I wanted them to. But when I actually think about it, I'm actually farming nearly 350 acres more than I was at the start of the process. So I'm using the same amount of fuel, but actually doing extra land. So I am actually at that point where I am seeing the benefit of less fuel use. The soils are opening out. They are becoming easier to work, not more difficult. I am starting to use less fertilizer, and I am using a more proactive approach to chemistry and actually starting to find that I need less of it. One in particular stands in my mind. One of the benchmarking groups was oilseed rape. And one of the guys at the benchmarking group says, "How are your figures so low on herbicide costs? You cannot grow oilseed rape without using a two-pronged approach to tackle your blackgrass." And what I've actually found is that by moving the soil less and making a more diverse rotation, diversity being one of the key points, I actually only need a one-hit approach to blackgrass. So I'm actually finding blackgrass less difficult to tackle, and it's costing me less. And that's all by treating the soil with kid gloves and treat it like a living, breathing organism. You don't want to hurt it. And the less you can do to it, the better. And I can see those benefits. The soil absorbs the water. Infiltration is at rates are much better, but it also holds on to that water to get you through the drought as well. So in the 4 years, the transformational change, yes, it's already there. I can see it.
And what experts have been on the farm? So you've had lots of advisors, experts. Who have been on the farm and who have you most valued?
Obviously, from the emotional point of view, there was a lady, Helen Wildman, that came to talk to us about the how to deal with stresses and how to deal with situations. And she's an expert on succession as well. But that stands out the most to me because of the impact it had on the room. Again, quite emotional about that because of the transformational change it made to the room and gelled the room very quickly. We've had several ADAS people come to visit us. So the likes of Anne Bogle to talk about soil and composting and nutrients and the manures and how to get the best out of them. Interestingly enough, is a massive topic at the moment because how else do you try and reduce your reliance on bag fertilizer that costs £700 a ton? But yet the EA imposed the restrictions on us. You can only use it once and in the spring. You know, that's very interesting. We need to make that fit. To Pete Berry, who's talked about the physiological developments of growing a crop, to the Richard, which I hope is Tomlinson, but I'm going to shoot myself in the foot if it's not, to explain how an organic farmer would approach the process of growing his crops and realising we're not actually that much different to him. To the people like Harry Henderson himself, to talk about machinery and machinery costings and the fact you need to wake up to depreciation and you only focus on those figures once a year when the financial returns come in. But they're very important. It's a very important and big part of your understanding of the package going forward. There are many, many other speakers, but those are the ones that really stick out in my mind at the moment.
And what would you say to other farmers who are thinking about becoming a monitor farmer?
Oh, don't think about it. Go for it. Go for it. If you've got a chance or they come to your area and they're asking for it, go for it. It will transform your farm. I don't know whether I can say that strongly enough. Don't even hesitate. Go for it. I was literally very, very nervous about doing it. And you're opening yourself up to a lot of criticism. You're raising your head above a parapet. But that only seeks to challenge what's inside your head anyway. It's only what's going on in there anyway. You just have to, bouncing it around your own head and talking to yourself, you've got to explain it to somebody. And when you've got to explain your issues or what you are doing, like you're challenging me only with questions, but the brain cells are going, and that process can only be liberating and could only be positive towards your farm. So don't hesitate. If you've got a chance, go for it.
Such a lovely endorsement. And I thank you so much for being so honest, Colin. You know, I can see at times during this conversation, it's been quite emotional just reliving some of those experiences that you've had being a monitor farm.
because it is a journey, and it's a, in my case, it's a four-year journey. The process I've been on is transformed me personally. It's transformed my business, and I am in a much, much better place now to deal with whatever bureaucracy is coming our way.
Thank you very much for listening. If you are interested in finding out more about the Monitor Farms that we've been talking to today, or would like to become involved and are interested in becoming a monitor farmer yourself, then head to the AHDB podcast. And also, please remember to register to vote in the Shape the Future campaign.